Welcome back, Deep Divers. We're diving deep, really deep into the Gospel of John today. But not just reading it, we're looking at the purpose behind it.
Right, yeah.
We have some really cool notes from Dr. Robert A. Peterson from his lectures on Johannine theology, specifically Session 5. And he really gets into the why of this gospel. We're not just looking at the historical details. We're going to really try and uncover what John's aims were when he was writing this.
Absolutely.
So I guess the central question for our listeners today is, what was John hoping to achieve with his gospel?
Yeah, that's the big question. It's easy to kind of impose our own modern way of thinking onto ancient texts.
Yeah.
And I think Dr. Peterson does a good job of sort of getting us back into that world, into that context of what John was trying to do to his original audience. But I think these things also speak to us today.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess a good place to start would be with what Dr. Peterson identifies as the primary goal of John's gospel.
Okay.
And I think it's one that John himself makes pretty clear in his writing. You know, it's easy to think, oh, the gospels, they're just recounting the life of Jesus.
Right.
But John actually gives us a pretty direct answer as to why he's writing.
He does. So if we look at John chapter 20, verse 31, we find this kind of foundational purpose statement.
Okay.
But these are written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name.
Okay. So the main aim is evangelism. Calling people to faith in Jesus.
Right, exactly.
And I think what's fascinating about this is in that one verse, Dr. Peterson pulls out some really important words.
Mm-hmm.
Believe Christ, Son of God, and life in his name. So it's not just kind of a passive acceptance. It's a call to a very particular type of belief that leads to real lasting life.
Right. And it's really interesting how John goes on to illustrate the power of belief, but also the struggle of belief
right.
in the story of Thomas.
Doubting Thomas.
Yeah, exactly. Just before that verse in John 20:24-29.
It's such a relatable story, I think, for so many people.
Right. I think we all know a Thomas, or we've been Thomas at some point.
I know I have. He essentially says, unless I see the mark of the nails in his hands and put my finger in them and put my hand at his side, I will never believe. Like, he's pretty insistent.
He's very insistent. He's not beating around the bush.
No, he's not. But here's what's so incredible to me. Is that Jesus doesn't dismiss Thomas's doubt.
Yeah.
He comes back a week later, this time Thomas is there, and he addresses Thomas's doubts directly.
He does. It's a very personal invocation. Put your finger here and see my hands and put out your hand and place it in my side. Do not disbelieve, but believe. It's a direct response to what Thomas said.
Yeah, it is. And Thomas's reaction is just so powerful. He doesn't even touch Jesus. He sees him and he's like, my Lord and my God.
It's a beautiful moment.
And Dr. Peterson emphasizes how significant this is.
Yeah.
Because for a Jewish man to call another Jewish man Lord and God, I mean, that's huge.
That's a big statement in that cultural context. It's not just saying, oh, you're a good teacher or you're a prophet. This is an acknowledgement of Jesus's divine nature.
Right. And then I think what's so powerful is Jesus's response. He says, have you believed because you have seen me? Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed.
Yeah.
That speaks to so many of us, you know, who hasn't had that physical encounter. It's the very nature of faith, right?
Absolutely.
And I think another interesting point that Dr. Peterson makes is that John is very selective in the miracles he includes.
Right.
He focuses on 7 specific miracles, which he calls signs. And he actually mentions this in John 20:30.
That's right. He explicitly says that Jesus did many other signs that aren't recorded. And because he was writing after the other 3 Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke,
right.
he wasn't trying to give kind of a complete overview of everything Jesus did. He was very deliberate in choosing those 7 signs to make his argument.
Right, right. And so there's this really interesting point that Dr. Peterson makes where he contrasts John 20:31, which is this statement about belief with John 12:37, which says, though he had done so many signs before them, they still did not believe in him.
Yeah.
And it really highlights how the miracles themselves weren't necessarily causing people to believe, but that there was a specific intention behind the signs that John chose to include.
Yeah, it's not just a random collection of miracles. It's very intentional.
So evangelism, bringing people to faith, that's the main goal.
Right.
But Dr. Peterson makes a compelling case that there's actually a secondary purpose at work here. Particularly in the later chapters of the gospel.
Yeah.
Specifically in chapters 13 through 20, which he calls the Book of Glory, and especially the Farewell Discourse.
Right. So after we've had the public ministry of Jesus in the Book of Signs, chapters 1 through 12, his focus kind of shifts to the disciples, to his closest followers.
Right.
And while evangelism, I think, remains a theme throughout the gospel, these chapters seem to be kind of more geared towards the edification or the building up of those who already believe. And in many ways, they represent the church.
So what are some of the examples of this edification that Dr. Peterson points out?
Well, one that he mentions is, you know, Jesus washing the disciples' feet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is a really powerful picture of humble service. But also, he notes the continuous need for forgiveness.
Right.
It's not just a one-time event, right?
Right.
But it's something that we need daily in our lives.
Uh-huh. And then we also have the promises of the Holy Spirit in John's gospel.
Right. The Spirit of truth and life who will guide and empower them after Jesus' ascension.
And then the warnings about persecution.
Yes. So preparing them for the realities of what it will mean to follow Jesus.
And then there's this whole section that we kind of skip over sometimes in John.
Oh, yeah.
Like chapters 13 through 17.
Right.
And it's really interesting. Dr. Peterson says that it's not necessarily geared towards evangelism.
Yeah.
But it's more about preparing the disciples for Jesus' departure. It's about praying for their sanctification, for their unity with one another.
Uh-huh. The high priestly prayer.
Right, the high priestly prayer.
Yeah, it has implications for the world and for us as believers today, I think.
Yeah.
But its immediate focus is on the disciples, entrusting them to the Father's care.
And the theme of hope is really strong there too, right?
Absolutely. This desire for the disciples to be with him, to share in his glory, like we see in John 17:24. It's a beautiful kind of glimpse into the future hope for all who believe.
Yeah. So we've got this primary purpose of evangelism, then this secondary purpose of edification. And then Dr. Peterson kind of throws in this third potential purpose, which he's a little bit more
hesitant about.
Yeah, hesitant about. He doesn't really nail it down, but he definitely he finds it persuasive.
Yeah.
And that purpose is apologetics.
Right. So this is the idea that John might have had in mind to offer a reasoned defense of Jesus and his claims.
Right.
In different parts of the gospel.
Yeah. And so what's fascinating here is that he actually pulls out specific examples of where this apologetic angle might be working.
Right.
So one example that he gives is the story of Nathanael in chapter 1.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. So Nathanael is described as an Israelite in whom there is no deceit. And Dr. Peterson kind of contrasts him with the deceitful Jewish leaders.
Right, right.
And it starts with Philip coming to Nathanael, and he's all excited. He's like, "We have found him of whom Moses in the law and also the prophets wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph."
Right, right. And then Nathanael's like, "Can anything good come out of Nazareth?"
Yeah, classic. I love that. Just total skepticism. But then Jesus sees Nathanael and he says this remarkable thing about him. "Behold, an Israelite indeed, in whom there is no deceit."
Yeah, yeah.
He kind of acknowledges his genuine faith, or at least his integrity.
And then there's that almost supernatural moment where Jesus says, "Before Philip called you, when you were under the fig tree, I saw you."
Right.
And Nathanael's just blown away by that, right?
Right. It's not explicitly labeled a sign, but it has a similar effect.
Yeah.
Revealing Jesus's sort of extraordinary awareness. And Nathanael's confession is amazing. "Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel."
And Dr. Peterson points out the significance of that title, Son of God,
yeah,
in the Old Testament.
Yeah, it was sometimes used to refer to the kings of Israel.
Right.
And that's signifying a special relationship with God. We see it in passages like Exodus 4:22 to Samuel 7.
And then Jesus connects this to Jacob's ladder in Genesis 28:12.
Right.
And he talks about the Son of Man. And Dr. Peterson really interprets this in terms of Jesus being the mediator.
Yeah, the bridge between God and humanity, like in 1 Timothy 2:5. So this whole encounter, Dr. Peterson argues, could be seen as a subtle argument,
right,
for Jesus being the true Israel,
right,
in contrast to the unbelieving leaders. And he even touches on the already and not yet aspect,
right,
of the future of ethnic Israel based on Romans 11.
Yeah, so it's kind of like John is engaging in a little bit of apologetics there.
Yeah. It's subtle.
Subtle.
But I think it's there.
Yeah. And then another interesting character is Nicodemus.
Oh, yeah.
He appears three times in the gospel. And Dr. Peterson kind of sees his appearances as potential moments of apologetics as well.
Yeah.
So he comes to Jesus at night.
Right. In chapter 3, yeah, secretly. And Dr. Peterson sees him as a sincere seeker, but also someone who needs kind of a fundamental understanding.
Yeah.
Of the new birth. And he links that to the imagery in Ezekiel 36 of spiritual renewal.
Right.
And then Jesus's statement about not receiving their testimony,
right,
potentially referring to the Father and the Son.
Right, right.
Adds another layer to that.
And then he pops up again at the Feast of Tabernacles in chapter 7.
He does, yeah. And this time he speaks up in defense of Jesus mm-hmm. before the Sanhedrin. Mm-hmm. And this is interesting because he's not yet a fully convinced follower.
Right.
But he's like, hold on, we need to hear him out. We need to be just.
Right. You know?
And he stands in contrast to the other religious leaders who are just like, no, he's out of here.
Yeah, yeah. And then finally he appears after the crucifixion.
Right, in chapter 19. And this time he actually publicly identifies with Jesus
yeah.
by bringing a huge amount of spices, 75 pounds of myrrh and aloes.
Wow.
To bury him.
That's a lot of spices.
It is. And Dr. Peterson emphasizes, you know, the cost of that.
Right.
And also the public nature of this act. Especially for a member of the Sanhedrin,
yeah.
it's a very powerful statement, even after Jesus' death.
Yeah.
And it really contrasts with the actions of the Jewish leaders.
Right.
And it kind of suggests that there's been a real shift in his allegiance.
Yeah.
It's a kind of quiet, powerful testimony.
Okay, so we've got Nathaniel, we've got Nicodemus, and then Dr. Peterson points to the story of the blind man in chapter 9.
Oh, yeah.
As kind of the most...
Prominent
example
yeah.
yeah, of this apologetic motif.
And this is a great story. Jesus heals this man who was born blind, which is just an incredible miracle.
It really is.
And then we have these amazing interactions between the man and the Jewish leaders.
Oh, yeah.
Where he's interrogated.
And his parents, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the parents are really afraid
yeah.
to acknowledge Jesus. And they mention this agreement, you know, that anyone who confesses that he's the Christ would be put out of the synagogue.
Yeah.
And Dr. Peterson notes that, you know, later you had these formal synagogue curses, but this kind of reflects an earlier form of
yeah.
that kind of hostility.
Right, right. And then, I mean, the back and forth between the healed man.
Oh, brilliant.
It's so good.
I love it.
And he's so sassy.
He is.
He's like, well, whether he's a sinner or not, I don't know. One thing I know is that I was blind, but now I see. It's so simple, but it's just like, what are you going to say to that?
It's irrefutable. It's from his own experience.
Right.
And then he's like, it's never been heard that anyone opened the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing.
Yeah.
It's simple logic. And Dr. Peterson even points out the sarcasm.
Yeah.
Where he says to the Pharisees, do you also want to become his disciples?
I know. It's so good.
Amazing.
And it's like this formerly blind man has become like this unexpected advocate for Jesus,
right?
Directly challenging the Jewish leaders.
Yeah, it really undermines their authority.
Yeah, yeah. So we've got evangelism, we've got edification, and this compelling idea of apologetics.
Right.
And then Dr. Peterson moves on to another key feature of John's gospel.
Okay.
That I think really sheds light on the purposes behind it.
Yeah.
And that is Jesus's I am sayings.
Oh, yeah. The I am sayings. These are really iconic statements throughout John's gospel.
Yeah.
Where Jesus uses this phrase, I am, followed by a descriptive title.
Right.
I am the bread of life. I am the light of the world.
And he distinguishes these from John 8:58, which is, before Abraham was, I am.
Yeah, that's a slightly different kind of statement. We're focusing here on the ones where I am is followed by this noun.
Right. And so Dr. Peterson emphasizes that through these I am statements,
mm-hmm.
Jesus is essentially speaking on behalf of God.
Yeah.
He's placing himself in the role of Yahweh from the Old Testament.
Yeah, it's a very bold claim
to
be making.
It is. It is. And so Dr. Peterson points to John 14:6.
Okay.
I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me.
Right.
And he says that this verse kind of summarizes the three main meanings of the I am sayings.
Okay.
So, first of all, Jesus is the way to God. He's not just a way to God, but he is the way to God.
Uh-huh.
And that connects to Acts 4:12 and the very meaning of the name Jesus.
Right, yeah.
Then there's the truth, Jesus as the truth, the ultimate revelation of God. And that connects back to the prologue, where it talks about the Logos.
Yeah, the Logos is the revealer.
Yeah, the revealer. And then lastly, the life.
Right.
Jesus as the giver of life. And so here we have the tension between divine sovereignty.
Yeah.
And human responsibility.
Right, yeah. You have to choose.
You have to choose
yeah.
to follow him. And then Dr. Peterson lists the seven prominent I am sayings. I am the bread of life.
Okay.
I am the light of the world.
Right.
I am the gate.
Okay.
I am the good shepherd. I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am the true vine. And I am the resurrection and the life.
Right.
And it's interesting how a lot of these, I think it's 5 out of 7, really emphasize Jesus as the life giver.
Yeah, that's a key aspect.
That's a key aspect of who he is, yeah. So what we've seen in this deep dive into Dr. Peterson's lecture is that there's a real rich tapestry of purposes behind the Gospel of John.
Absolutely.
Primarily, it's a call to evangelism. It's a call to believe that Jesus is the Christ,
right,
the Son of God, and to find true life in his name.
Uh-huh.
Secondarily, it's about building up believers, particularly in those later chapters.
Right, edification.
Edification, yeah. And then we've got this really interesting potential third purpose of apologetics that weaves its way through the text. And so, as we've seen, these purposes, they come out in all sorts of ways.
Yeah.
Through the signs that John selects, through the dialogues, through these I am sayings.
It's not just a bunch of random stories.
No.
It's a very carefully crafted message
with,
I think, a clear intention.
So here's a question for you, listener. How does understanding these original purposes shape how you read the Gospel of John today?
Yeah.
Does knowing the why help you understand the what better?
I think it does.
I think so, too. We encourage you to go back and revisit some of these passages and these themes with these purposes in mind.
Yeah.
See what you find. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
Great to be here.